When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
And only Josh Brown, because Mr. James Dow sadly couldn't make it in today, but it's all right. We've got plenty of things to talk about.
You can tell the people the truth, Scott. You can tell them where James Dow is. You can tell them that he's buried in my backyard after the horrific slander that he was throwing my way in regards to House of the Dead.
I was
going to
say my
PS3.
Head could not remember what you were referring to, but I was going to make some sort of joke of, don't worry, he's not the only unanimated being, because you've been playing with House of the Dead.
I'm so sorry. That would have been such a better intro.
I don't know if it would have been. I'll tell you what's apparently not very good is House of the Dead. Well, I don't know why are you on that? You messaged me the other night going, I'm on the House of the Dead, and I was like, why aren't you on Ori?
I had a bit of madness, that's why, yeah. Scott. It was Saturday night. After saying on one of the podcasts last week that I was going to take a bit of a break from gaming after getting a little bit burnt out rinsing a bunch of titles earlier in the month,
yes.
I saw House of the Dead on sale for 15 crisp pounds, and I saw that they were compatible with the PlayStation Move controllers, and I thought, I've got some PlayStation Move controllers in the cabinet over there. So I said to my girlfriend,
keep them in the cabinet as well.
Yeah, oh, yeah. They do. Oh yeah, they're on display. So I said to my girlfriend, would you play this with me? And she said, I mean, if it stops you from, you know, playing The Elder Scrolls Oblivion, I guess I will. However, it wasn't so simple as that, my friend. This is now my therapy session, because I had to bust out the old PlayStation 4, because the PlayStation camera, the one I have, isn't compatible with the PS5 without an adapter cable. So I had to get out this dusty ass PS4, hook it up to the telly, find the camera, charge the Move controllers at like 11 o'clock on a Saturday night to finally sit down and play this game, which lasts at best 45 minutes. And I'll tell you now, it was kind of worth it. It was an okay time. The Move controllers kind of tracked.
Yeah.
It was a lapse, you know, like in Better Call Saul, you know, when Jimmy McGill's brother Chuck,
yes,
kind of like has his episodes where he thinks he's, you know, allergic to electric.
Yes.
I kind of had one of those. It was like a manic breakdown, but it was revolving around House of
the
Dead.
I can see you running around your apartment in sort of like a space blanket, just running from one side of the room to the other, gathering up all the peripherals that you need.
It was a little bit like that.
Yeah. Whilst girlfriend sort of just watches and just goes, are you going to sit down? What are you going
to
do?
Would love to play it with you, though, that said.
I have it
forever. So you can come around, I'll give you a Move controller, you can get really annoyed when it doesn't work, as it should, and then play House of the Dead with me, man. Get
I
the
do
high
like
score.
That's the thing. I like how squidgy the PlayStation controllers are, PlayStation Move controllers are, because I had to gather up a couple. Speaking of sprinting around, I had to run across our fair Newcastle City in the northeast of England to get a second controller. It was the only other PlayStation Move controller in stock in the whole city.
Is that true?
Back when the PlayStation VR, when I decided to get a PlayStation VR because No Man's Sky was going to have a VR update. And what am I not going to spend my day off playing the No Man's Sky VR? Of course not.
100%. What a humbling experience as well, by the way, getting the PlayStation Move controllers at all.
Mm.
Because I remember similarly getting them because I was getting a PSVR system. And literally a week prior, those things were £8 each in CEX.
Yes.
And as soon as Sony repurposed them for the PSVR, supply and demand meant they were now £80. And I could not believe that I had to pay 80 quid for those things when I could have got them for nowt.
Yeah, that was my thing. I got into a very stupid mood, which I don't know if any other people who play video games get into a mood where you're like, I'm just going to keep throwing money at it until the problem is done. I don't mean in like a microtransaction context. I just mean I want this thing to work. So it's like, okay, I need this cable. Fine, I'll get that. Like, okay, I need this extra TV. I don't know, whatever I need to get things to work. And in that case, it was like, okay, I need two separate PlayStation Move controllers. And like you said, I don't think I paid 80 for the second one. I think it was like 40 or 50, but I was still like, oh my God, this is a stupid amount of money, but I've already spent most of my day here. So like, I might as well do this.
Dude, that was me with like a student loan, getting a PSVR system, which was fine. You know, I split that with my parents, in fact, and then realizing, oh, hang on, I need the Move controllers. Oh, hang on, I need a camera? No one told me about this.
I didn't even think that when you said you were playing this, that you would have had to plug the PlayStation 4 back in.
Well,
that's a horrible
reality.
Honestly,
when I bought it, I didn't think that either, Scott. No. And then afterwards, I thought, I regret everything.
Because you need a camera hooked up to it for it to sync up with the PlayStation Move controllers. That's why you need it.
I could have used the motion tracking on the DualSense.
Yes.
That would have worked, I assume, or even the DualShock 4. But I was like, come on, man, if I'm going to gimmick this, I'm gimmicking it all the way. I'm going to have to go whole ass with it.
Always go whole ass. I would like if you could hold a controller sideways like a gun, and yes, like you do in Infamous Second Son, which rhymed. It wasn't supposed to. But there's a whole mechanic in that game where you're spraying graffiti everywhere with the controller on its side, and you shake it up, and you use the shoulder trigger as an actual gun trigger.
Yeah.
And it almost becomes a gun. I'm like, just let me do that, and let me shoot the zombies with that.
That should be doable. You can probably...
You think so?
With enough like spit shine and enough elbow grease and enough ingenuity, maybe you can like... You know, Jimmy that to work.
Jimmy McGill, I would have bought House of the Dead immediately if I could have just turned the controller on its side and shot some zombies. If I have to hook up a PlayStation 4,
yes,
I'd rather eat my own toes.
Even for, I wouldn't recommend eating your own
just
toes.
Just a few toes.
I don't think there's much protein on those things. It's mostly bone and gristle.
Topine.
That said, I would recommend it if you want just some light gun action. You know, light gun games can be very fun and very kind of like mind-numbing in a good way. If you want to, it's half an hour to complete the campaign, which is nothing, but it's intended to be replayed with different weapons and on time trials and the hard mode that they've got in. So if you just kind of wanted to do that, I'd say £15, not bad.
I'm a man who grew up on a G-Con 45 on the PlayStation 1 with Time Crisis and Point Blank, and one other game that I can't think of right now. But yeah, I have a vested interest in this stuff, and I always lament the fact that those days went away, and I can't get them back unless I buy a PlayStation 2. But even then, most modern-day TVs don't let you play light gun games on them anyway.
No.
That was your way of getting around it, was the lens thing, the camera thing, or whatever. I do actually have some notes for this podcast. We're 6 minutes in, because we thought we'd start with, we want to springboard a little bit off the EA tweet that sent ructions through the universe, I was going to say, where there's a whole, and then, well, then we'll get to some new stuff, because I've got about 5 cool little news stories for us to dive into. But the EA tweet that did the rounds that a lot of people just went, oh, EA, what are you doing? Was piggybacking off the whole Twitter trend of, let's just, you put the phrase out, they're a 10, but insert X thing that you don't like about them. And EA tweeted, they're a 10, but they only like playing single player games. And everyone went, oh God, EA, we've been through this enough times.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until a few days later, and I forget who, it might have been Glenn Park from the Washington Post, he tweeted something saying, oh, I've just realized what they meant. They meant there's no one to play with them. Like, and they only play single player, as in they won't also join me to play the other stuff. And it was meant to be like a self-diss. It wasn't meant to be that single player games weren't worth anything. It was just meant to be that like they're so unattainable and they're brilliant and single player games are phenomenal. That's where they'll be.
I never got that until right now.
No, I know. And it took me a few reads to sort of get it. Mm. And even then, you've got to give them a lot of benefit of the doubt. But point being that EA, as one of the many third party developers, publishers, whatever, that just cannot catch a break in the gaming industry. But what do you think of this whole thing in regards to the state of single player games?
Well, first off, I'm really gutted that we didn't do a news on this, because it would have been a very fun one.
The real reason.
Last Friday, yeah.
Yeah, the real truth behind this tweet that only three people have thought about.
Hey, I would have been fascinated to watch or be in that. However, just going for the tweet yes. in isolation and away from that great explanation that you've just gave.
Thank you.
Right there. I said to you off camera that I actually thought it was a genius bit of marketing.
Well,
you know,
we kind of agreed. It got everyone talking. It was absolutely. Very self-aware. Like, oh, EA, but you know, they're a bit multiplayer, but no.
100%. Like, I had never seen the EA official Twitter account in my life, and then I saw it retweeted 100 times that day. So, true. Yes, it was 100 times people dunking on it, but in terms of, you know, marketing, all press is good press, goes the adage. And this was definitely a lot of press that it
this
got.
This was just a fundamental misunderstanding of a current trend.
Yes.
But yeah, the thing I was going to springboard off this for and do a very quick little discussion on is, do you think the value of single-player games, this is me asking you now, not rephrasing Mr. EA. But yeah, do you think that the value of single-player games is the same as it is now as it has been in previous generations? Because I think it is drastically minimized. I think that the amount of games or publishers or studios or whatever you want to say, putting the time and effort into crafting a good story and crafting a new world is so second to a gameplay mechanic that can be repeated every 20 minutes to pull a lever on a loot box and give you that over and over and over again.
I'm going to have to split your question there.
Please
because
do.
Because if we're talking purely single-player games, not story-driven games or, you know, story-focused games, I would disagree. Because I think if you look at some of the biggest successes of the past few years, yes, there's been a lot of multiplayer games in there, but there have also been an incredible amount of single-player games. You know, just look at this year with Elden Ring. And I know that has multiplayer elements, but I'm talking, you know, majority single-player open-world game. You know, that sold 12 million copies. You know, we've had Horizon Forbidden West out this year. We had The Last of Us Part 2 a few years before, Red Dead Redemption 2, The Witcher 3.
You're only 3 or 4 years back, though.
Well, those are just the biggest off the top of my head. I'm talking, you know, games that resulted in world-shattering sales. And all of those games definitely resulted in world-shattering games. And I would say, you know, yes, there have been a lot of multiplayer games alongside those titles, but I think that single-player games, even by judging from the reaction to this tweet, are still an incredible part of the gaming industry, and people still have the hunger for them that they used to have.
I do want to believe so. And I do, that's the thing, is that it's nothing beats it. I don't want to quote Tyrion from Game of Thrones, one of the worst episodes of all time, but I do very much think that one of the best things out there is a good story.
Right.
And it's like, that was kind of, to give D&D on the Game of Thrones context, the biggest benefit of the doubt. I think that's what they were going for. And that, you know, stories can stand the test of time. And I just find that in the modern gaming industry, and especially right now at this time of the year, stories are minimized. It's more about multiplayer stuff. It's more about platforms for content, etc. And it's not to say that I'm not adoring the likes of Neon White, and that game has a really, really fun world with a couple of story beats in it. There's not much in terms of like plot twists or, you know, really great character writing or whatever. But I just kind of hope, I wish that was the case across the board. Like in terms of, you know, when you cite stuff like the big open world single player games, most of them are now Sony, on the Sony side.
Yeah.
Xbox haven't really got a dedicated single player, oh my god, game. Like Halo Infinite is maybe the closest, but it's more of a multiplayer thing. Nintendo haven't really had any sort of huge first party grabber games in a while. Luigi's Mansion 3 might be one of the last ones that I can think of. So I'm like, industry-wide, like, yeah, we can point to some third-party stuff, but I feel like overall story isn't really valued as much as gameplay mechanics. And gameplay should be king, but I'd like some story. I'd like a reason to care.
I don't know, man. Like, you mentioned Microsoft there, and yes, while over the past few years, it's, you know, single-player games haven't been of the highest quality, there have still been some, like, you know, the Halo Infinite campaign, or more importantly to me, the Gears 5 campaign and the story that was started in that new trilogy. However, I do think if you look at the lineup that Microsoft has right now, like leaving aside Activision for a second, before that acquisition, they were buying publishers and developers who excelled mostly, I would say, in story-driven single-player games. They bought Bethesda, obviously famous for single-player RPGs. Under that umbrella, they had the likes of Machine Games, famous for single-player first-person shooters. Yeah, like single-player first-person shooters in the Wolfenstein games. You know, you got Evil Within in there, Prey, all of that stuff. So I do think that the games that they have in development are skewing,
I guess, the thing
towards single player and towards stories.
It's not that stories don't exist in video games. It's just that I think when you think about what the industry likes to focus on, they rarely like to champion story. Like if you think about what makes the most money, or what mechanics are the most bankable, or what sort of general game formulae are the most bankable, I think, and maybe it's just a cynical approach based on having done this for a decade, that most number crunchers favor monetizable mechanics and monetizable loops and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't feel like there's a sanctity to the storytelling inside video games. It's almost like the thing that just gets bolted on,
right,
to sort of facilitate said money grubbingness.
Without a doubt, I definitely agree with that to an extent. You know, if there's one thing that a lot of executives want us to believe, it is that single player is dead. You know, EA championed that for literal years, telling us that single player games aren't viable. Mm. However, my kind of response to that is that every time they've said something along those lines, survival horror doesn't make money, it's dead, people don't like it.
Oh yeah,
single totally. Player games are dead, it doesn't make money, people don't like it. There's always a game that proves them wrong and stops that messaging dead, whether it's Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order or whether it's like Resident Evil 7 or something.
Oh, totally.
There's always a game that kind of proves that no matter how much executives might want to kill stories, fans want them. And as a result, they will continue to be made. So that would be my response. I agree that, you know, they definitely want to prioritize the monetization, want to prioritize multiplayer, mm-hmm. and we're definitely seeing a shift toward that trend. However, I don't think we'll ever see single-player games or story-driven games ever become kind of extinct or totally minimized.
No, me neither. And also, I'm not necessarily agreeing with that. I just think that sometimes when I think about the dark heart of gaming or the dark soul of gaming, I feel like we're always fighting over it from the fan side or the consumer side versus some of the studio practices that get put into place. It doesn't feel like a lot of the money people are fighting for stories. It feels like they're fighting for complete exploitation.
Oh, and that's, dude.
You know, like, it's like they would birth the repeatable game mechanic 10 times over, a million times over before they would justify why it's there in the first place.
100%. Like, those people who are counting the money, if they had their way, would have every game be Call of Duty or every game be
an Avengers.
Fortnite or every game be an Avengers. And thankfully, they don't get their way all the time.
Premium currencies. Yeah. Speaking of premium things, let's get into the new stuff. There's a Lollipop Chainsaw remake coming.
Yes, there is.
Now, fun fact, James Guardians of the Galaxy Gunn got his start with Lollipop Chainsaw. I think he wrote quite a lot of it. He's been tweeting quite a lot about it across the last year or so, as people sort of found out this little tidbit, this little fact about him. And then recently, as it has been confirmed by former producer Yoshima Yasuda over on Twitter, says there's a full remake in production. Due to licensing issues, they can't get the 15 official songs that were on the original version, so it's going to have all new music. And to quote him, we'll be taking a more realistic approach to the graphics. They're aiming for 2023 as a release date. But what do you think of this getting a full-on remake?
Well, I kind of want to know what you think about that specific quote, you know, taking a more realistic approach to the graphics. Because obviously, Lollipop Chainsaw is known for its bombast, let's say. It's known for its
panache.
It's, you know, over sexualization. Yes. It's kind of like really tongue-in-cheek, big, campy, kind of colorful fun, you know.
Well, the thing is, I've not played Lollipop Chainsaw, but it is in that similar vein as like a Sunset Overdrive or a really over-the-top, what used to be early style Platinum games kind of thing. It's a third-person hack and slash game, not too dissimilar to a No More Heroes in terms of the tone. And I know this game because we've featured it on a bunch of lists. I know that if you pan the camera behind the lady, then you get an achievement saying, I wasn't looking up there, but now it's marked on your profile forever. And so stuff like that seemed to be at the heart of the humor and stuff that was in this game.
Yeah.
There is a whole interview with James Gunn talking about that stuff, and how he thought that he was writing the character to be very female empowerment and being in charge of that stuff, and how ridiculous a lot of female bodies can be seen. But Starlet, or whatever her name is, that you play as, is always in control of her, always has agency in those spaces, and that's how he thought he was writing. That's how he would defend that character,
right,
or whatever. Like I said, I've not played Lollipop Chainsaw, but I guess it has enough of an audience that it's worth putting this much time into.
I mean, yeah, totally, man. Like, I mean, again, I wasn't a huge fan of it back in the day. I just found its combat a little repetitive and whatnot. However, you know, there's a reason that we still talk about it today. We still put it on lists. It made an impact in a cult way on popular culture. And like they mentioned in that interview, you know, it's difficult to access now because of the rights and the licensing issues and whatnot. So I'm going to be interested to see what they do and don't update with this title, because it's very much a title of its time. Mm-hmm, and if they're talking about more realistic graphics, I don't know whether I'm reading too much into it and wondering if they're going to kind of tame some of the stuff down, or whether they're just going to be like, yeah, this is just the Lollipop Chainsaw, you know, with slightly prettier graphics.
I assume it's just a render pass. Like I said, because the thing is, when I think of realistic graphics, if you like we're going to define that as a term, then that's like human looking stuff. It's not animated. It's not, you know, in terms of, it's not cel shaded. It looks realistic.
Yeah.
And when I think of Lollipop Chainsaw, for those very small amounts that I've seen it, those are humans doing stuff in that game. So that is what I would say is already a realistic art direction overall, even though, like you said, it has a lot of bombast, really ridiculous color palette. And I'm sure you talk to your boyfriend's severed head.
You do.
Like the original God of War it back is. In 2007 or whatever it was. And, but yeah, I assume that realistic graphics just means kind of like what the Saints Row 3 remake had,
yeah.
where it was just exactly the same guts of the game, but it had a surprising amount of fidelity added to the overall render passes of the character models.
Yeah, true. I mean, I'm going to be excited to see, like I said, you know, what they do with it, whether they do anything with it. And yeah, if they just kind of like, you know, take what's already there and make it prettier and, you know, put it on next gen consoles and what have you.
Yeah.
I'm sure it will find an audience, and it is kind of surprising to me in a way that it hasn't happened already, because I feel like, like I said, you know, there's a reason we still talk about it, and that's that it is in the cultural gaming.
Well, it is like a super cult classic. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Yasuda says that it's the reason they want to do the remake is just because the game isn't available as much as they would like it to be, so yeah. they've got to go back and you know, touch it up kind of thing. Next news item down is that Sony are hiring a software development engineer to develop new emulators to run classic games across the legacy PlayStation platforms. To quote their job announcement, as a classics engineer, you would work closely with a group of other engineers, producers, and QA teams to fix bugs, add new features, and this is key, develop new emulators. So Kotaku are pulling from, as one of the many people who wrote it up, but Kotaku focused on those and that specific set of words, assuming that they're actually hiring people to iron out the PlayStation 3 side of things or develop new emulators, maybe something like the PlayStation Vita. There's only so many consoles that they can pull from that aren't already on the PlayStation Premium service. PlayStation 3 stuff feels like the most obvious. Like I still think that's stupid that you have to stream PlayStation 3 games. Like, why can't we just access them properly?
Dude, if they're willing, I've said dude a lot. I always say dude when I'm tired.
I was thinking before when we were doing the intro and we were sort of we're all over the place. We're a bit slapdash. I was like, want to tell the audience that we're not high, nor are we drunk. It's just 4 p.m. We've been doing this all day.
It's 4 p.m. and I'm in bed by 6. Yeah. So
I've got somewhere to be.
It's practically 11 or 10 o'clock for me.
Prep the sheets.
Yes, what was I saying? What were we talking about?
We were talking about the idea of it being stupid that you've got to stream PlayStation 3 games.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I'm like fine with it at the moment if that's the only way we can get those games. However, I do crave the ability to download PlayStation 3 games and play them at a higher resolution with their less input lag, with maybe HDR turned on, you know? And if there is a way to emulate those titles on a PlayStation 4 or a PlayStation 5, I want that. I want to see what MGS4 looks like, you know, with these extra kind of built-in touch-ups that you would get on the Game Pass or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and plus, as you're a man who I quote, can't wait to play Infamous again.
It's so true.
And so I wonder is that on PlayStation streaming right now?
It is right now, yes.
Do you think, are you going to do that on streaming, or are you going to wait and see if this bears fruit first?
I will.
Because your other contender is Oblivion.
Well, this is the thing, right? I will play it right now because I mean, how many times have we done a news video on Sony patenting a kind of system or an
five
idea.
5 or 6 years.
I mean, yeah, we were talking about backwards compatibility on the PlayStation 5 like 2 years before the PlayStation 5 came out. We were.
Lord damn it.
But the issue is, it took like 4 years from that patent being, you know, signed to getting any kind of backwards compatibility on that system. So I'm not going to hold my breath for this.
Right.
If it does happen, I'll be buzzing about it, but it's not going to, you know, make me hold off playing games on the off chance that would happen. Like, it's the same with the potential Bloodborne remaster, man. Like,
oh God,
I played that earlier this year, even though there have been so many rumors about that thing, because if I keep holding my breath, I will eventually pass out from waiting for some of these games.
Take it from someone who waited to play Sonic CD until they got the Sonic Origins collection. That was not worth it at all. But that's mainly because Sonic CD is a horrendous video game. But at the same time, I think that in regards to PlayStation 3 or any sort of legacy service, it just needs to tick that box. And I think I'm curious how many people, if they have the player data, if they're tracking how many people are playing what from the home menus and everything, how many people start a PlayStation 3 game, realize, I mean, obviously you click stream, but they go, oh, I'll see what it's like. How many people are bailing on that stuff almost immediately? Because it is a hell of a resolution drop if you're going from anything that's been rendered in a decent resolution with a decent frame rate all the way back down to sometimes 1080p, sometimes struggling to hit 30 FPS, whatever. For me, it was quite stark. I thought it was good or worthwhile in terms of being able to dip into the likes of Dark Void or whatever. But I think that there's so much more that can be done if you're going to attempt to say that this is a respectful catalogue of back classics.
Totally. I do think we disagree little bit in terms of how we value that streaming service, because you are talking about there the dip life and, you know, jumping
into
something
and
get
stuff.
A taste of it. I will happily play through every God of War on streaming from front to back and just think it's the best time ever. Sickening. So I am perhaps more easily pleased when it comes to that.
I don't
service.
Think it's easily pleased. I don't know. I think I'm too scrutinous when it comes to this stuff. Because for me, I'm just like, well, I know how it played when I went through them the first time. It was back then, it was 60 FPS on a PS2 for the first God of War, the first couple of God of Wars. And so I don't know. For me, it's my time worth thing. It's a how much money I'm giving them thing. Like, it's £100 a year. So I'm just like, why can't I just, if you're going to attempt this, do it properly. Like, it just felt like it was a last resort thing. Like, it was just sort of like, oh, well, we should have PlayStation 3 games on there, but we haven't put the time in to develop the emulators just yet, so just stream them, which is obviously what the PlayStation Now always was. But it seems like they've recognized that, and they're working towards fixing it. They've definitely hired some people for it. What if they do a Vita collection or a Vita PlayStation collection. Go collection?
Oh, man, like that would own. I almost wish there was a Vita collection on there already, because there are so many games, you know, like the Uncharted spin-offs, the Killzone spin-offs.
The best Killzone is on there.
Well, totally, man. That's what people say, that these are more than worthy entries in these classic franchises.
Yep.
And because I never owned a Vita, I never managed to play them. So, yeah, if that is one of the emulators, that would be sick.
Most of the Vita's control scheme will go straight across. As well, like some games use the back touchpad, but it's very few and far between,
right?
And you can just kind of make that the front touchpad or whatever. Next news item down is the Michael Gamble for BioWare has tweeted out saying that BioWare themselves have just hired Mary DeMaul, who's a writer from Deus Ex and Guardians of the Galaxy, to serve as the new senior narrative director on the new Mass Effect. So I thought we should talk about Mass Effect in general. It's interesting because the Guardians of the Galaxy game is one of the best Mass Effect games ever made.
Yeah,
like that game has a really good sense of go do a mission, come back to the hub world, to your base or home base or whatever, check in with the characters, have randomly super emotional exchanges with them. The Guardians game is, like I said, one of the best Mass Effect games, and it's surprisingly very well written, very well character driven, feels like a perfect fit, to be honest, getting one of the head writers and just going, okay, you already know how to do this, do this officially.
Absolutely, you know, I can only echo what you said there. The Guardians of the Galaxy game, for as much as I couldn't get on board with its combat, was just superb in terms of its characterization, in the way that it built its world separate from the movies and the comics to kind of create its own thing that was obviously inspired by them in some ways, and just like hanging around with those characters on that spaceship, like you said, it gave me Mass Effect vibes to begin with. So I'm excited to see how those talents transfer over to this, because I don't know about you, but BioWare generally I don't have much trust in, but I am cautiously optimistic, because I just don't think they can make any kind of mistake again with these franchises.
I thought you were going to say a good video game.
Well, maybe that's it as well. I do think with Dragon Age 4 and with the next Mass Effect, it's make or break for that studio. You know, Anthem was such a pivotal moment in that studio's history alongside Mass Effect Andromeda, that I do think if these games fail, man, and it brings me no joy to say that, but
no, I know.
The writing seems to be on the wall if they don't live up to expectations.
Well, it seems like their two sort of lifelines are the next Dragon Age, I forget what it's called now, but the next Dragon Age and the next Mass Effect. And Mass Effect, I think they said, is coming after the next Dragon Age.
Yeah.
Because even Dragon Age itself, I wish I could think of that thing's name. It's Wolf something. That game, they got out there and said that was what they were focusing on. They sort of announced it publicly without making sure, with EA. That was when everything was going sideways, when Anthem was coming out. And it just, I think it's called the Dawn Wolf.
Getting it up now.
Oh, it's, I'm so
Dread
close.
Dread Wolf.
The Wolfman, and it's not Rich Hudson. And that whole thing seems to be that they need, you know, like you said, they need something. It's make or break. They need to sort of get somewhere close to how they were regarded in the early 2010s, which my gut says is impossible, just because of the amount of staff that have left. I mean, you've still got Michael Gamble here. I'm forgetting all the names at Hoffel. But you've got, like, you know, some team members who worked on Mass Effect Andromeda that did come across on the original trilogy.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But they don't have the powerhouse people there. They don't have Casey Hudson. They don't have Drew Karpyshyn on this specific project. And I wonder.
This is true, right? I do agree that they have lost some key talent. However, I think it's easy to overlook that sometimes those key talents also worked on BioWare stinkers, also worked on Anthem, and that didn't save them. Maybe some fresh blood in that studio is what it needs. Maybe some quality talent from other studios coming over who have proved themselves and are able to adapt those skills for these games will make them better than what the old lumbering BioWare would have produced anyway. I don't know.
That's a good way to think about it. And I think that it does need life injecting into it. It's kind of like the new cinematic universe, the cinematic portion of Star Wars. Like, you're giving that to a whole bunch of new creatives and seeing what they can come up with. And maybe that'll be the same with Mass Effect. Where are you at on Mass Effect anything? Because I don't know where. I love Mass Effect so much. Yeah. And then it's just kind of there now.
I'm the same. You know, Mass Effect for the longest time was my favorite franchise. You know, we love it so much, both you and I. But I need to see something.
Yeah.
I like that I know it's coming. I like that we had that teaser trailer. But unless I see what it is, tangibly see what it is, how it's going to play, what the story is, I can't feel almost anything about it until then. I can't get excited and I can't get... you know, really negative about it. I just sort of nothing it at this moment in time until we know more.
I wonder if I'm too plugged into this stuff where, like, when I see something like this being announced, if I was younger, I'd be like, oh my God, they're doing more Mass Effect. And I wouldn't even know about all the behind-the-scenes rumblings. I wouldn't even know the people that left the project, and I wouldn't know the state of BioWare. I'd just be excited for more Mass Effect overall, and I would look at who is assumedly is Liara in the teaser and be like, oh my God, the story's going to continue. How cool. Whereas now, I just feel too burned by long-form IP resurrecting storytelling from Game of Thrones to Star Wars to whatever, and I just don't trust them to nail it. It's just like a lot of those creatives have gone. And I think it's going to struggle. But at the same time, you know, it's BioWare. They did used to have the BioWare magic. Maybe there's a way for them to bring that stuff back. And like I said, I still would hold up the Guardians of the Galaxy game as some of the most Mass Effect energy I've got. That side of Horizon Forbidden West.
I would fully agree.
Games that did Mass Effect better than Mass Effect.
There's a list for you, my friend.
There's a list for us, my friend.
Get that written. Yeah, I would agree. And like I said, I just also don't want to undermine the Deus Ex credit in there.
No, not at all.
The modern Deus Ex games, I also really loved. Like, they weren't perfect, but I thought Mankind Divided especially started something really interesting that sadly Square Enix sort of killed. And we'll never get to see how that story ended. But the game itself was really strong, and the storytelling in those games, whilst somewhat lacking in thematic weight, were still interesting and engaging and gave us well-written characters.
Yes. I mean, the thing is, like, Deus Ex, that should be one of those pillar games. And it almost is. But like you said, Mankind Divided Divided was such a weird Square Enix adult augment your pre-order thing that it just landed so weirdly. And they've not made the original one that accessible. As I say that, I realize I can get it on my Steam Deck. So all you've got to do is drop £500,000 and then you can get on it that way. So I need to do it that way. But yeah, I think that, like you said, it's worth mentioning that this person has gone between Deus Ex and then Guardians of the Galaxy, and the writing was stellar across the board.
Yeah.
So assuming that'll be the case for Mass Effect as well. Next thing down, I've got it's EA hiring a design director for the next Battlefield. This is an advert over on their own website. They're advertising, saying that the position will let the person tell rich, exciting stories with memorable characters and powerful experiences all in the Battlefield universe. Now, this comes after known insider Tom Tenders Henderson said that Battlefield 2042's production is down to a quote-unquote skeleton crew to fulfill the various legal requirements for that game's pre-order bonuses and whatever else has been advertised before they move on to the next Battlefield anyway. So it seems like EA are gearing up for that. There was also a quote, and I'm forgetting the name, from the person who said it, but it was one of the new directors over at DICE saying that they have a three-year window to become the premier first-person shooter studio, and you know, they want to get on it in terms of, but they also said they're committed to Battlefield 2042, which I just don't believe anymore.
I don't know what to think, Scott, because we've had so much mixed messaging about the Battlefield franchise as a whole. You know, we had the big letter that went out from EA at the start of this year, talking about how they were getting Respawn, Vince Zampella from Respawn, to help on the Battlefield franchise, how they were committed to telling stories in the Battlefield 2042 universe, how they were going to support the game, yada, yada, yada. Seemed like we were getting so much Battlefield, but at this moment in time, I just don't know what that's going to entail. Is it going to entail a new game that has a brand new campaign with apparently engaging stories and set pieces? Is it going to be Battlefield 2042 revitalized and turned around? Is it going to be a sequel to that universe?
Is it going to be a hero shooter?
Is it going to be a hero shooter? It seems like they like that universe. It's just like, what the hell do they do within it? And I don't think, for as much as I love Battlefield, that a Battlefield campaign is the answer, because, you know, there have been some fun ones. I really liked the one from Battlefield 4, Bad Company's campaign was all right, but it's never been like the thing.
Are they not diametrically opposed goals? Like, they want to be, you know, they're like, oh, in 3 years we're committed to Battlefield 2042, we want to be the premier first person shooter studio, but the thing that they specialize in is almost, I would say, fundamentally not what the mainstream audience goes for en masse. As in, they're not Call of Duty. They're not snappy, responsive, PvP, you know, constantly engaging first-person shooting.
Killing me here. Killing me.
They are wider, you know, tactical, take your time, like, take the checkpoint one at a time, overcome all 5 points on a map to win, run out your enemy's tickets until you eventually beat them. That's Battlefield's DNA. And I don't know. I mean, like, the only thing that they've gotten from chasing the competition is failure. Like, Battlefield 2042 has its take on a hero shooter, and everyone hated it. So I'm just like, maybe you're striving for the wrong thing here.
I mean, I'm never going to disagree in terms of Battlefield should not be copying hero shooters. Battlefield should not be copying Overwatch. It should barely even be copying Call of Duty or Call of Duty Warzone or anything like that. Mm-hmm. However, I do disagree in terms of, I do think it could be a premier first-person shooter franchise, because it once was. You look at the sales for Battlefield 3, Battlefield 4, Battlefield 1, and they are incredibly high. You know, they are real kind of like Call of Duty contenders, even if it might not reach the same heights as Call of Duty. Like, it still sells. Those games still sold so much, had a lot of fan love behind them, and I would say, personally, that I think the combat itself is snappy, is engaging. It has that kind of level of finesse that allows it to compete with the twitchiest shooters in the game.
The thing is, I think it's just, when I think of it in terms of an overall match flow, like, I think of the stuff that people respond to, I think of the Twitch streamers, I think of the stuff that lets Call of Duty be Call of Duty when it's, like, firing on all cylinders. And maybe it's just because Battlefield's been quite weak for so long. I mean, Battlefield 1 was 2016, and I feel like as solid as Battlefield 5 was, and as playable as 2042 can be sometimes, it just feels like they've had a bit of an identity crisis.
Oh, totally.
I found the name of the person as well. It's EA DICE's general manager. She's called Rebecca Coutaz, or Coutaz. And it was her talking about, you know, we want to get back on top within 3 years. But that, like I said, even in itself, if you think about where 2042 is, where do you come down on, you know, when do you cut that game off? Like, is it just healthier to sever that thing and move on to something else? Or do they spend the next 3 years making 2042 into the Battlefield that can have all sorts of other things plugged into it?
I do not get paid enough to make those decisions. And if I was smart enough enough to know the answer to that, Scott Telford, I would be working a dice, telling them what to do.
Roll the dice.
We'd be rolling the dice. I honestly don't know. I think there is a way that you can turn Battlefield 2042 around. However, it's going to need a relaunch. You can't just... It would need to be almost called something else. Give it a subtitle. Give it something that differentiates it from the reputation that the core game has right now. Mm-hmm. I do think the bones of it are strong enough to support like a really good Battlefield game, and they definitely could turn it around in 3 years' time. I would like them to do that rather than completely cut ties and just try something else. Because, like I said, there's a lot to like about Battlefield 2042. You need the time to get there. It's the question is, does the community give them that goodwill? Do they even deserve that goodwill? I don't know if they do.
That's kind of the thing. There's a lot of here's everything wrong with Battlefield 2042 style videos. And it's, I mean, I'm not a diehard Battlefield fan, but I know there is a lot up with it. And they'd only got a scoreboard like last month. Like it was at the first sort of 6 months of launch or whatever, were really, really messy. And my go-to thing is make it free to play, just get it in front of people. And they kind of did that with the trial version that was on Game Pass or EA Play. And I think that for me, that would be I would try it again. If you told me it's fixed or you told me it's cool and it's worth playing, but it's free, I can just like hop on a version of it that maybe isn't 100 gig to download, then I will totally do that. But it needs to have all the bells and whistles and be fixed. Like, I still think that the version they advertised looked promising.
Yeah.
Like that sort of all-out vehicular carnage, like big open world, look at what these systems can do stuff. But at the same time, it was only like last month or whatever when they said that they were cutting the player size down in some of the biggest modes because they just can't get it to work, which is kind of insane,
it
to
is,
be honest.
It is a little bit, my friend. It is a little bit. And it's going to be interesting to see what this game looks like by the year's end, because I do think there is a cutoff point. If this game isn't compelling come December, if there isn't content there that people are very excited about, I think that's when you're in the danger zone. Mm-hmm. That's when you should start thinking about cutting ties. Now, you know, 6 months away out of launch, you still have a little leeway as far as I'm concerned. You're still in that time where it could be a Battlefront 2, but it might also be an Anthem 2.0. We just don't we don't know yet.
Yeah, I'm curious how they go in terms of time period and stuff as well. Like, I like the future stuff. I don't know where you come down in terms of like boots on the ground, old school military stuff versus the future stuff.
Well, honestly, I think 2042 splits the difference well. Mm-hmm. Like, you get the future tech, but it's still very much a grounded game in terms of the infantry combat. Yeah. It feels near future enough to not be sci-fi, but still, I don't know, I think it does split the difference well.
Yeah. And plus, well, that's the thing, 2042, like, in theory, is this big platform with everything else being plugged into it. And then I guess if you go back to, you know, they're hiring and they got this new person sort of doing memorable stories and memorable characters and everything, then that kind of feels like the vignette approach they started in Battlefield 1, which I would say is one of the most confident things that they've done in the last 10 years of Battlefield. Like, pick a character, can be fictional, whatever, and do a cool sort of 45-minute, couple-hour story that takes the single-player box. And I just think that's, for me, that's the way you do it.
Yeah.
You plug those little stories in that sort of flesh out the world, but the world has to make sense in itself anyway.
Yeah,
so totally. I think it's a hard thing to balance. The last thing is Final Fantasy 16 getting kaiju battles. Now, this comes from director Naoki Yoshida, saying that there are epic summon versus summon battles, and not only in cutscenes. Players will be able to actually get into those battles and control an Akon, which is this game's version of summons. They always get a different name per every single Final Fantasy. Get into those battles, control an Akon or an Econ of their own, and feel the excitement from the inside. Get that on a plaque. not just from an outside type of view. Now, this made me think of... because obviously Japanese, like lots of Eastern anime, manga, whatever, kaiju battles in general are very much an Eastern thing. But I feel like they've kind of started making their way across into various video games. Even Pokemon had kaiju battles,
right?
With their Dynamax stuff in Pokemon Sword and Shield, where you could have a gigantic Pikachu fighting a gigantic Snorlax or whatever. And are you there for it? I don't know if I'm there for it.
Cards on the table. As listeners may know that I'm not hugely versed in the world of Final Fantasy, nor am I hugely versed in the world of anime.
Yes.
That said, from what the developers did with the combat in Final Fantasy VII Remake and 15, you know, kind of allowing you to play and have agency with what used to be kind of these spectacular turn-based fights with the animations and that. Mm-hmm. If they manage to give that same care and attention to these massive kaiju battles and put you in full control of them, hell yeah. For that,
I have a lot of faith in Yoshi P, as he's nicknamed, and he refers to Final Fantasy to 16 in terms of what they're building as a roller coaster ride. And it seems like the trailers they've put out so far are kind of like Final Fantasy VII Remake's overall pace. Like, that game just goes in terms of the combat, and it couldn't be further away from a turn-based thing in terms of the pacing. And so I guess if you take that, like, level of production and just go, here's Ifrit or Shiva or Bahamut or whatever, like the fire god, the ice goddess, and the dragon god or whatever, and let them all fight each other, then that's kind of cool. I just kind of hope that it doesn't become this slow, lumbering thing that gets away from how fast and snappy everything else is.
That's true. I don't want to control anything massive that is lumbering around. Like, it's, I used to love the Godzilla games, man.
But I was thinking of War of the Monsters as well.
Oh, I used to love War of the Monsters as well.
It's good at the time.
But yeah, any of those like big tanks, I never find fun to play as. Even when you get like Metal Gear Rayman in there.
Metal Gear 4. I love that fight.
It's spectacular, but yeah. I need to be faster.
See, I think there's maybe, I can't think of that many games. Titanfall 2, one of the only games that gives you a mech and maintains the pace, and it feels like a power-up. It doesn't feel like you're being addled by like a different form. It's like, this is like an extension of your movement.
Yes.
Something like that.
Unlike Fallout 4, when you get the power armor and you just think, why would I ever play this game like this? Yeah. I will abandon that power armor in a pit somewhere.
One of the worst things about this idea is that it done worse, it's like a moving turret sequence, and you're just sort of stuck. It's like, well, now I've got an infinite minigun, but that's just boring. Like, the reason everyone hates turret sequences. So I guess it depends how it's done. Where are you at on Final Fantasy 16 overall? Now, you seem to be getting a bit more into Final Fantasy at the minute.
Hey,
he's downloaded some of them. He's not played them yet. No, but he's getting them.
I've downloaded them.
They're in front of him.
I'm very hyped for it. I really am. The first trailer didn't blow me away, but the more I see from it, and the most recent trailers have gotten me on board. You know, after the Final Fantasy VII Remake, I am very much in to this franchise in a way that I never was before. And yeah, I will be there. My first ever day one purchase, I think, of the Final Fantasy entire, you know, back catalogue will be Final Fantasy 16.
The thing is, I think we're eating very well at the minute because, and the thing is, we've got Final Fantasy this year. Are you getting Crisis Core later this year?
Probably not, but
okay.
Only if it's good.
The thing that's interesting about that is, like, if you're a Final Fantasy fan and you grew up on let's just say you started, obviously, 7. 7's the one that they're fleshing out the most, and you have Crisis Core coming out later this year, which is a remake of the game that came after the original Final Fantasy 7, but is fundamentally tied into that game's biggest plot twist, whole thing, whatever. Now they're front-loading the rollout of the remake of Final Fantasy VII in full by giving you a game about that plot twist beforehand. So I'm just like, if you're a Final Fantasy fan, trying to pass this stuff out, and especially like you, if you're coming into this stuff, then it's like, okay, you should actually like wait, you know, play Crisis Core while you're waiting for Final Fantasy XVI, bank that, and then also look forward to the next part of Final Fantasy VII and play Final Fantasy XVI in between. And then there's also Final Fantasy XIV is sort of underneath the whole thing. I don't know how your brain passes out the amount of Final Fantasy coming at you at the minute.
It's a lot of it. It can't, because it's without the context, and fortunately I know someone as knowledgeable and as passionate as you, but without like the context, like Crisis Core, like that would mean nothing to me. Mm. I would look at that and I would see the reused levels from Final Fantasy VII and think, this is a bit slapdash. And obviously that's a dumb take, because people who are looking forward to it are like, this is incredible.
No, but the thing is, that's a really, really valid point, and not necessarily tied to the news that we're talking about, but in regards to the way that they're rolling this stuff out, Crisis Core now is this fundamental building block towards the next part of the main Final Fantasy VII trilogy called Rebirth, that's coming in 2023. But the various like interviews that are doing the rounds are saying that the Crisis Core needs to be played for what they're doing in Rebirth.
Right.
I can almost vouch for that anyway, knowing the way the story is going to go.
See,
and so that's, but the fact that it hasn't landed that way.
I hadn't seen that at all. I knew I would have to play it from you, but I hadn't seen those. Maybe I wasn't looking, but I hadn't seen those quotes. Well, and now that I know that, now I'm thinking, I'm going to have to play that this year.
Well, because at the end of the Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 1, when you see the black-haired person, I don't think they give him a name in that remake, because they can't yet. I know we know who he is, obviously. I don't know if anyone mentions him yet, and he's mentioned again in Integrate. The Crisis Core is about him, but like, you're not meant to know what that dude does or who he is or anything until way later in the overall story. So it's a very confusing thing. I don't even know if anyone understands anything I've just said.
I don't understand anything about Final Fantasy, man. I don't know what Final Fantasy like 7X2 is, or Final Fantasy 13X1 1 and Team
Lightning
3.
Returns,
Lightning
Josh.
Returns. I don't know what those games are. they scare me, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's the thing. They always like take, or they've only done a couple of times in the past, Final Fantasy X-2, and then there's the trilogy of Final Fantasy 13 games, and this is the time they've gone back to Final Fantasy 7, I guess again, because you had all the anniversary stuff, like Dirge of Cerberus and the original Crisis Core, and After Crisis, or whatever it was called. Mm. Whatever. There's all that stuff circling around Final Fantasy marketing, and I think somewhere in there is someone like you who's going like, what the hell even do I need to focus on? It's kind of 16, it's kind of the next main Final Fantasy 7, and then it's people like me going, but don't miss Crisis Core, otherwise you won't understand all the time stuff.
My question then, jumping off that, is when Final Fantasy 16 comes out, it's obviously going to be an event. It's the next proper numbered Final Fantasy in a long time.
Since 2016.
Is there a potential for oversaturation with the 7 remake, with Crisis Core coming out at the end of this year, with Stranger of Paradise earlier this year, and then with 16 out and 7 remake part 2 rebirth in the same year
don't
as well.
Don't forget Chocobo GP, mate.
In Chocobo GP. Is that too much? I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. It depends how they parse it out. I think it's quite hard keeping up with everything that's going on in Final Fantasy 7 right now, and I mean the new timeline, because you've got so many crazy fan theories. They've hacked to pieces the original story and then inserted so many bits and pieces into it. We also have the other remake of Final Fantasy VII coming, Ever Crisis, which is them remaking it again.
What?
Yeah. There's like, so they're remaking Final Fantasy VII again, but it's a mobile-only version of it. But it's canon. It's not like, and it's a whole gacha thing where you pay money to insert characters into scenarios that they didn't have before, but they've said that there's going to be elements from Crisis Core in that one. So, right. Like, Ever Crisis is like a unified timeline of the overall new version of the Final Fantasy VII story, which in itself is a sequel to the original, so it's like, blah.
I'm getting a nosebleed. Can I ask you a question, please?
You can try.
On the PlayStation Plus service, right, there are two games. There is Final Fantasy VII, not the remake, just Final Fantasy VII, that's what it's called. And then there is Final Fantasy VII Remastered. What is the difference? Because I would assume that Final Fantasy VII regular is already remastered by virtue of being on this service, because the PlayStation 1 version isn't there as far as I know, unless it is. I'm confused. I've got the remastered version right now, but I don't really know what that is. I've just got it downloaded.
All they did for the remasters was they added lots of like game options, so you can speed stuff up. You can speed up the whole game by like 4 times.
Right.
You can, I think there's an infinite lives mode. There's a 9999 damage mode. They're all one button away, so if you're getting stuck on a boss, it's just ways to mitigate old school game difficulty.
Okay.
And they're not in the original. So if you want to, if you just want to grind out a bunch of levels, put the game on like hyper speed and just ping pong around an area for a while and to get those things up. Whereas back in 1997, you just had to grind that stuff out and do it, you know, the way that it was designed. That's pretty much it. I mean, it depends how much they've auto upscaled the original in terms of HD and frame rate, but Remastered definitely has HD 60 frames a second and all of the button toggle stuff.
Very sick.
If you just want to do infinite damage and whatever, you can do that. It's an absolute nightmare, though, in regards to keeping track of all this stuff, and from any casual fan's perspective, and for someone like me trying to keep up with the new world of Final Fantasy 16 and whatever's going on in 7, even though they are separate worlds, but I want to try and keep up with all the different permutations of the characters and everything else. All of this is to say, and it's not even related to what I'm about to say anyway, that this is the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Telford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Telford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.